You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Lake Superior to Lake Michigan, this is Wisconsin's Morning Conversation. Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us on this Friday morning. Some sunshine in Madison and hopefully some sunshine where you're at. I think it was supposed to be mostly sunny across the state. Some nicer temperatures than yesterday, just a titch warmer. Not nearly the spring-like weather we've seen, but, you know, hey, no rain. We need that. So we'll take what we can get, Brian.
Well, yeah, unless like we talked about the other day, you're in the north or the south part of the states. If you're in the center, if you're in the meat of the state going east to west, very, very wet. Everywhere else, not so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be a nice weekend. Get out there, enjoy it. Treat your mom nice or treat yourself nice, whatever you got to do. But before you do any of that, there is some you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
Yeah, man, there is some stuff you need to know. You need to know that the U.S. Trade Court yesterday ruled against President Trump's latest 10% global tariffs, finding across-the-board tariffs were not justified under a 1970s trade law. The U.S. Court of International Trade ruled in favor of small businesses that challenged the tariffs, which took effect on February 24th. The ruling was 2-1, with one judge saying it was premature to grant victory to the small business plaintiffs. The small businesses had argued the new tariffs were an attempt to sidestep a landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision that struck down the Republican president's 2025 tariffs imposed under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. In his February order, Trump invoked Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974, which allows for duties for up to 150 days to correct serious, quote, balance of payment deficits or head off an imminent depreciation of the dollar. Thursday's court ruling found the law was not an appropriate step for the kinds of trade deficits that Trump cited in his February order. That does not surprise me. He doesn't do a lot of research. He just acts out of whatever strikes his fancy that day. So that is that's good news for small businesses, hopefully. And I hope they start getting those checks that they've been promised.
Right.
Now, we won't get any of that money. Don't get all excited. It's not like a tax refund. We're not going to see it, but small businesses will, which hopefully, in turn, will lower some prices.
Yeah, and for, you know, if you're looking at Wisconsin being a manufacturing agricultural state, I mean, this is good news. You have to be very, very happy across this state, too, especially since we are a large exporter of machinery, paper products, dairy, so much more, because obviously businesses have to pay those tariffs, which in turn means we pay those tariffs, and we'll continue to remind. Well, we're continuing
to mind. I don't think you understand economics, Jamie. Other countries pay those tariffs. That's what I've been taught.
That's right. That's right.
In my cut-rate economics class at Trump University. There is more stuff you need to know.
There is. We've got a few more headlines this morning. We're going to go back to talking about maps because it looks like
this is infuriating.
This is infuriating and not at all unexpected. Let's be realistic. Tennessee's Republican-dominated legislature passed redistricting maps yesterday, eliminating the state's one Democratic black majority congressional district a week after the U.S. Supreme Court effectively gutted that major section of the Voting Rights Act. The move cracks Tennessee's 9th congressional district, which covers Memphis, into three pieces, each of which contains almost exactly a third of the city's black voters. Now, these new maps mean that all 9 of Tennessee's congressional districts are Republican-leaning. The district had closely occupied the southwest corner of the state. Now, 3 districts snake out from Memphis's center, with 2 crossing the Tennessee River to reach Nashville suburbs 200 miles away. During a congressional session, as Democratic lawmakers spoke, the House Speaker directed state troopers to remove a section of the audience in the gallery, which had begun shouting. One state Democratic representative described Cameron Sexton, the Tennessee House Speaker, as, quote, the grand wizard in chief, and handed a Republican lawmaker a Confederate flag. The Democratic representative offered amendments to the bill, which the Speaker ruled had been submitted in an untimely manner. This comes 8 days, just 8 days, after the Supreme Court's landmark Calais versus Louisiana decision, which invalidated swaths of the Voting Rights Act, which had restrained state governments from drawing congressional districts that left black voters at a political disadvantage. Despite demands from the president for conservative states to conduct mid-decade redistricting, up until this point, up until yesterday, Tennessee had refrained from taking action before the court's ruling. I think essentially some of these states were actually just waiting for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Tennessee is an unusual case because 75% of the residents did not want it redistricted. And Memphis is unusual. Memphis's congressional district was not created by maps. Memphis is an organically African-American community. If you've ever been to Memphis, and I love Memphis, it's one of my favorite places, it is an unusual city, but it is predominantly black. And so that was, they had one seat. And yesterday, if you watched any of the footage, it was repugnant watching these Republican lawmakers walk out of the chambers smirking and grinning. And one was wrapped in a Trump 2024 flag. And they made no secret about the fact that this had nothing to do with politics, which was the basis of the case in Louisiana. This was all about getting that one black Democratic district gone. They wanted all the seats. They made no secret about it, and they got it. And for the governor, who said he was trying to do this to echo the will of the people was quite clear. They didn't want this redistricting. They didn't want this new map, but they got it anyway. And so now a city that is, it's a black city with Democratic vote. They've always voted Democratic.
But that's
now
the
point.
Now
we're going to cut that out. Yeah, oh, I know that's the point. But it's just the point. It's like, okay, Jim Crow, thank you.
And this isn't just about one state, right? Essentially
no,
what
but
happened
it's
last
the
week.
Latest, yep. It's the yep. latest. And it is the most blatant so far.
It essentially what happened last week at the U.S. Supreme Court changed the rules of the game. And we're going to see more and more of this as the next few months progress, because this is what my biggest concern was when the Supreme Court made this ruling. Because states are under their own jurisdiction to decide how these maps get redrawn, there is going to be a massive push for the midterms in November, because they know that if there's not a massive push, if they don't change these maps, they are not going to win. Polling would indicate in every phase that the GOP is going to be a loser when it comes to the midterm elections. And if you are in the state of Wisconsin, if you are anywhere listening on the app, and you are wondering, what do we do about this? First and foremost, you need to pay attention to what's happening, right? Because redistricting isn't always going to make headlines like this Tennessee case, but it has long-term consequences. You also need to show up. If there's a public hearing, if there's a local meeting, if there is feedback opportunities, these moments matter more than you think, because with enough pressure, sometimes you'll get somebody to cave. And sometimes it's just one vote. That's all you need, is one person to cave, and that's all it's going to take. Third, you need to stay informed about who is actually drawing these maps and how they're doing it. And finally, you need to get out and vote. I know that sounds so repetitive, and it sounds so, at this point, easy. And like it doesn't matter. It does. You got to get out and vote, because if enough of us vote, even with redrawn maps, you can basically make your opinion heard, and you can reshape things based on your vote, even with a redrawn map.
Well, I would imagine if you are a black voter in Memphis, you are going to come out in hordes. Now, will it make a difference because now you're split up into three Republican districts? Maybe not. Probably not. But it will make a dent, and it will show, it will, this, there will be a statement there. There mm-hmm. will be a statement. And then we just have to make sure that if the Democrats take control of the House and the Senate, that they pass this gerrymandering law that has been, bill that has been sitting in Congress for decades. It's been there. Yeah. It just has to be passed. But all right, let's move on to something a little closer to home, because who doesn't love a good book ban? Oh, my goodness. In 2024, parents in Menominee Falls filed a complaint with the state, alleging the school district's removal of a children's book depicting same-sex families was discriminatory. Now, 2 years later, the DPI says it has limited authority to assess whether the school district of Menominee Falls violated its local policies or the law. Oh, really? Pass the buck a little bit? Menominee Falls parents say DPI and the state superintendent Jill Underley took too long to rule and missed its chance to show support for LGBTQ plus families. Chris Bucker, the spokesman for DPI, told WPR that Wisconsin is a local control state, so DPI is generally not allowed to overturn a district's decision to remove a specific book from its collection. He said, "Our role is to assess whether legal requirements and local policies were followed in a given situation." In October 2023, the district pulled 33 books from the shelves after deeming them too, quote, sexually explicit. Here's one of the books. Jamie, you can let me know if you think this is sexually explicit. It's called Love Makes a Family. It's by Sophie Beer. It is a picture book that describes that was described on Amazon and is an exuberant, broad book. It says whether a child has two moms, two dads, one parent, or one of each, this simple preschool read aloud demonstrates that what's most important in each family's life is the love of the family members.
I'm failing to see what's wrong with the book.
Well,
I'm failing.
Maybe I didn't read the description clear enough.
Okay, all right.
Whether a child has two moms or two dads.
is that the problem? Is that
two moms or two dads?
That must
is not
be the problem.
Christian and biblical.
Gotcha. I'm looking at the book right now. Like, I'm looking through.
I looked at it yesterday. Very nice.
It's a very lovely book. This is a tapestry of color and fun. And
it's not a how-to.
No, being in a same-sex marriage. It's a beautiful book.
It's about, hey, your family, if no matter who you are, what kind of family you have.
It's beautiful.
Why should we tell kids that there's different families? Why should we open kids' views up to, hey, Parker has two mommies and Brian has two daddies and Jamie just has a mommy and Frank was raised by wolves and is fueled by hate. But so everybody's family is different. But if you love your family, that's what's important.
I mean, let's be clear. Every family in this country in 2026 looks different. Right? They really, truly do. Everybody's family looks different. There is no right or wrong in how, I mean, there's things.
I think DPI passed the buck here.
Of course.
They could have said something within 2 years. And, you know, even if they couldn't change it, they could have made a statement. Because you have people from the LGBTQ plus community in your schools, in your communities, their children are being educated under your system. They deserve at least a statement.
Yes.
That while we don't agree with any books being banned, we have to defer to the district. So if you have issues, we urge you to speak to your superintendent or the school board. That would have been the right thing for DPI to do. They did not do that. They fell flat, and we're calling them out. Hey, we don't want any fibs coming around here trying to collect signatures for people who are running for office. That goes for you Minnesotans, too. And Iowans, we don't even count you. We're going to talk about that next on Daybreak. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We hope you are having a great Friday. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Hey, Brian, you know what? If you like what you hear on this show and you want to find out more about us or things that are happening on Daybreak, we'd love for you to go check out all of our fancy new social media pages.
We are nothing if not accessible. Go to Facebook or Instagram. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. You can go on there. You can, on the Facebook stream, you can watch the show happening right now.
That's right.
Every morning.
Very exciting.
You can do that. So Facebook and Instagram, you've got Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. Do you like podcasts? Who doesn't? Did you miss our fascinating conversation about Hantavirus? Did you miss us shouting down DPI for not making a right decision? Go to Spotify, because that's where all the best podcasts
that's right.
are. Spotify, look at Daybreak with Brian and Jamie, and then you can like it, you can subscribe, and you'll be on the feed, and it just comes to you. So if you miss the show live, you can always go back and listen to it. You know how podcasts work. I don't know why I have to explain that to you. And you can always download the Civic Media app. Civic Media app is free, and it gives you access to not only our stations, but every station under Civic Media. And you can listen to music, you can listen to our show, you can do whatever you want on the app. And if I may, since we were talking about podcasts,
yes.
and since we're talking about Spotify, I've only mentioned this once on the show, but today is the last day to vote. My podcast, Crafty Brewers, Tales Behind Craft Beer, which I work with my longtime radio producer and good friend, Cody Goff. He produces very, very well. And we are up for the Quill Podcast Award for Best Video Podcast. If you like beer or you like interesting stories about people who make beer, then this is the podcast for you. But if you go to any of my personal pages or the Crafty Brewers Instagram page, you'll see a link. It's really simple. It takes about 2 minutes. If you go in today, like I said, is the last day to vote, and then it goes to the judges. We won this award last year. We want to build a dynasty, because you can't spell dynasty without Crafty Brewers. So I would appreciate the support. And I want you to just check out the podcast, because we put a lot of work into it. It's really, really good. It looks terrific. A new episode is being dropped today. So go check that out, and thank you in advance for your votes. If you want to take the time, if not, I won't know. Just whatever. These guys all said they voted. I don't know
voted.
If they really did.
I did.
I don't know, but I appreciate the
I
effort.
I used two different email addresses that. So I could vote for you twice. There you
I
go.
I love that Chicago mentality. Trust me, I have all my email addresses voted. Are we trying to stack it? Yes, but I've learned that, you know, unless it's a real election. Anything like this, if you don't really vote for yourself,
right?
Who knows?
Right.
So anyway, but that's that. So thank you. Don't forget, all our social media channels are what's really important. But to me, that's a secondary important thing, and I think you'll really enjoy it. All right. You know what the state does not enjoy, Jamie? Obviously, people from other states coming in and helping with elections, because you know maybe you're running. Maybe you live in Kenosha or somewhere, or Eau Claire or somewhere along the border of Wisconsin, and you're running for office. And you're like, hey, my friend lives over across the border. They're going to come up and help me collect signatures. That seems like it should be okay. Mm-hmm. But it's when big groups start doing it, that's when trouble comes. And so a conservative law firm says a new bipartisan ban on out-of-state residents collecting signatures for candidates running for Wisconsin office is unconstitutional. So they want those big companies, because mm-hmm. we heard about that a lot during last year's Supreme Court race, that big groups were coming in. You remember when Elon was trying to buy the election
yes.
in Wisconsin?
Chainsaws
remember
all on those, a stage.
Yes. Chainsaw! All those big groups that were coming in, the reports of out-of-state canvassers coming in trying to get signatures and campaigning. Well, in late March, Tony Evers signed a bipartisan bill making it illegal for people from outside Wisconsin to collect signatures for launching recall elections and getting state and local candidates on the ballot. The law has an exception allowing those from outside Wisconsin to collect signatures for presidential and vice presidential candidates. All right, well, that's a national office.
Sure.
I can see that. I'm not opposed to that. It was a direct response to a failed recall efforts against Robin Voss. Those attempts were driven by supporters of Donald Trump, who attacked Voss for not trying to decertify the president's 2020 election loss in Wisconsin. Oh boy, here we go. I don't know. I think it's one of those. If I have family members that want to come in and help me with my campaign, and they live out of state, I don't see a problem with that. It's these big paid groups.
Of course.
That are backed by PACs and stuff.
Yes.
That I have. But so in order to get rid of them, you have to get rid of everybody, I guess.
Right. And how do you pick her? That's just it.
Right.
It has to
it's
be a blanket
baby,
law.
Baby with the bathwater. Everything's got to go.
And we saw those PACs even during this past election. Who because not only were they trying to impact the state races, but instead of impacting state races this go around, they wanted the local races. They were going after mayor's races. They were going after school board races. They were alder people. They were essentially embedding themselves and spending millions of dollars to do so. Mm-hmm. And that's where the problem comes, right? And you know, think what you want about Robin Voss. He did the right thing with the election. He knew the election results were good.
It was legit. It was, Jamie, if I may, too legit to quit.
And he did. It was too legit to quit because he just quit. He's like, no, we're not pursuing this anymore. We're not doing this anymore.
If the election is legit, you must quit.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I believe I hate money in politics in all ways, shapes, or form. And especially when you're starting to get groups, and I get when you have any sort of PAC involved, there's always some sort of reason. But if you're coming in from an out of state just to disrupt an election, that is unfair to the voters of that state who should be given the opportunity to make up their own minds and not be bombarded with postcards or robocalls or whatever it might be.
Exactly. All right, we're going to take a break for news. When we come back, the director of Horse Sense, which is a very cool organization, is going to tell us all about their organization, an upcoming fundraiser, and a new campaign. A lot going on. I'm Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak.
I'm Jamie Martinson. It is 8:29 right now. Happy Friday. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We always appreciate it. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Good to have you with us. Adaptive horseback riding is a type of equine-assisted service that improves and empowers the lives of individuals with disabilities by experiencing the life-changing friendship with a horse. For more than 30 years, Horse Sense has helped thousands of individuals with disabilities establish their independence through a life-changing bond with the horse. Horse Sense is launching the Where We Grow Next transitional campaign ahead of their third annual Ponies, Pinos, and Pilsners fundraiser. Joining us with all the details of the program and the upcoming fundraiser is Samantha Harding. She's Director of Administration at Horse Sense. Sam, thanks for being here. We appreciate it. So, I just read a little description, but I still don't quite understand. Tell us what you guys do at Horse Sense and who benefits from that program.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll try to keep this as short as I can.
We got time.
We offer adaptive horseback riding services and unmounted horsemanship. So we kind of take that traditional horseback riding lesson setting and adapt it to the needs of whoever comes to us. So most of our individuals do have a diagnosis of some sort, but that diagnosis can range from anxiety, ADHD, depression, things like that, all the way to, you know, spina bifida, cerebral palsy. We see autism, we see Angelman syndrome, we see Down syndrome, just kind of a whole wide array. And we really try our best to take that traditional horseback riding lesson that might not be as normally as accessible and make it as accessible for our individuals. And then we also pair that with unmounted horsemanship. So we really like to have a well-rounded approach. We really like to emphasize, you know, caring for the horse and how, you know, it's not just showing up and getting to hop on and ride, but, you know, we really want to build that sense of responsibility, caring. We really try to work on some of those life skills while doing those things at the same time. So our riders kind of come from a wide array of backgrounds. We work with a lot of kids, but we also work with a lot of adults. We have a Horse Sense for Heroes program. So that's for veterans, dependents, active duty, and Gold Star families. So those individuals can come and participate in programming. And for them, it's just kind of a free, relaxing environment for them to kind of get away from the everyday busy, busy life. We also have a new program that we started called Hoof and Heart Connection. So that we're really trying to aim and get into the schools. We've been really fortunate to get some school groups out for like one-time field trips so they can experience the barn and kind of get that little break from the classroom while also learning some of those, you know, life skills. So
Samantha, as you talk about the different people you help with the different array of disabilities, how does working with that horse help someone in a way that, and I know that there's always traditional therapies involved, but how does help working with those horses help in a way that maybe traditional therapies just maybe don't reach, or what kind of sense of confidence does it give some of the people that you work with?
Yeah, so it really depends on the individual. One of the more like physical ways it can help specifically is, so anyone who might be really like tight in the hips, so we personally see it a lot more with individuals that might be in a wheelchair most of the time. The sitting on the horse is a really nice stretch for your hips. And we have them ride on a Western pad, so they're a little more contact with the horse, and their hips can actually kind of feel the way the horse moves. And it kind of helps just stretch their hips. We had one family recently that came, they had their first, couple lessons, and then they went back home, and we got a report that the child had actually sat like crisscross applesauce for one of the first times, because it just had allowed their hips to kind of stretch in a way that they hadn't been able to simulate in maybe the PT and OT that they normally do. But outside of that, when we're looking at maybe some of the more non-concrete ways, emotional regulation is a really big one. Horses really just kind of soak in all of that energy around them. So for some of our individuals who maybe have a hard time identifying emotions, it's really nice to sometimes use the horses. If a rider, runs into the stall and the horse kind of backs away from them, we can kind of look at that like, what was that horse telling you then? And they're like, well, I don't think they liked that very much. And they're like, well, do you like it if someone comes running at you? And they're like, I guess not. Like, I really don't. And so we can kind of use that as some, self-reflection and whatnot. And I think the horses just allow an easier way to kind of make some of those breakthroughs. Because our riders really take pride in, the relationships they build with those horses. So it kind of just allows us to, maybe meet some of those milestones in a unique way.
Samantha Harding's our guest. She's Director of Administration at HorseSense. HorseSenseWI.org is the website if you want to get more information. HorseSenseWI. Before we get into the Where We Grow Next campaign and the fundraiser, what is it about horses, their temperament or whatever it is, that makes them such a beneficial therapy animal for your clients?
So, I mean, I'll say, first of all, not every horse can do this line of work. We go through a very rigorous process when finding horses for our program, because there are horses that aren't going to be happy doing this line of work. We really need horses that are, cool and, okay with a lot going on. Obviously, all of our horses have their own personalities and everything like that. But we really want to make sure that they're happy doing it in the first place. But when you find those, kind of special horses that really make it work, those connections they're able to build with their riders, I feel like a lot of ours can just really read the room, per se. I've seen our horses, a individual comes in and they're terrified. They are crying. They don't want to touch the horse. Like, they are just absolutely petrified. And I have seen one of our horses stand pretty much like a statue for nearly 45 minutes because they can just tell, like, this person needs me to stand still and just stay here. And they have just stood there. And then by the end of the lesson, the individual is, petting or grooming the horse and, have built that confidence. And so I think the ones that kind of make it in this line of work are just really in tune with what's going on around them. And they're able to kind of help in that way. And it really allows that breakthrough to happen.
Horses are absolutely amazing. It can be in that respect. But let's talk a little bit about this campaign. And it is called the Where We Grow Next campaign. Explain to us what this is and what you are really hoping to have happen for HorseSense and how you guys want to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the last 12 years, we have been extremely fortunate to call the beautiful property that we are currently located on home. However, things change, and the individuals that we've been leasing the property from, just it's no longer a financial option for them to have the property. it's not a financial option for Horse Sense to buy and own the property. So we have to relocate. You know, it was unexpected. It's not what anyone wanted, but that's how the dice have just fallen, you know, very, you know, unexpectedly. So the Where We Grow Next campaign is helping us kind of relocate. So we have a new home. We are not announcing the specific new home yet, as there's still a few things we're finalizing. But with this relocation, we have to pause programming. Summer is our busiest session. So this coming Friday, May 15th, is going to be our last day of programming. Not for the year, but for right now. And then we're going to have to move. So we're going to have a major loss of income, you know, for those summer months when we're not able to operate. And also just the cost of moving. We've been in our home for 12 years. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot.
Anybody who's moved right now is going, oh, I don't envy them.
Well, I know. I just moved my own house last year. And so I'm like, okay, we can do this. So yeah, so the Where We Grow Next campaign was just really started with the intention to kind of get us through this, you know, this hurdle. So that way we can, you know, get to our new home. We can get the horses acclimated. We can get the infrastructure in place to get programming back up and running as soon as we can. So that way we can continue to serve, you know, the La Crosse area in our community for another 37 plus years.
Now, how can people get involved if they're listening now and they're saying, oh, well, all right, I would like to contribute to this campaign. It sounds great. And we're going to talk about the fundraiser. Maybe I don't live in the area, so I can't get to the fundraiser. There must be a way that I can send, you know, a little something to help.
Yeah, absolutely. So if people like to donate online, they can go to our website. We have our Where We Grow Next campaign. So the website's horsesensewi.org. And you can donate directly online that way. For those who maybe don't like doing online giving, I know not everyone prefers that. So you can also mail checks to P.O. Box 906, La Crosse, Wisconsin, 54602. And make checks payable to Horse Sense. And then that will also be put towards the Where We Grow Next campaign.
Perfect.
We're talking with Samantha Harding. She is the Director of Administration at Horse Sense, horsesensewi.org. We're going to give that website out a few times so that everybody can go check out this amazing program and maybe support them if able. But let's talk specifically about this fundraiser. First of all, I love alliteration. So the fact that it's called Ponies, Pinos, and Pilsners is fantastic.
Three of my favorite things.
So what can people expect when they attend this fundraiser? What's going to be happening and when? Give us all the details, please, Samantha.
Yes. So the fundraiser is May 21st from 5 to 8:30 at Horseman Homestead Farm and Events in West Salem, Wisconsin. And it's a family-friendly beer and wine tasting event. So we have the beer and wine tasting side. We have samples from numerous local wineries and breweries. I guess we'll be able to try unlimited samples, however, you know, they want to do that. And then we'll also have, just for everyone, there's going to be lawn games, tractor rides. We have Chef's Table food truck from Winona. They're going to be there for dinner. We have raffles going on. There's going to be music. Brian McCarty, he's the lead singer of Hillbilly Rocket Ship. He'll be there providing music for the events. And it's just going to be kind of a fun little evening with all the proceeds that we kind of raise from that going towards that Where We Grow Next campaign.
So this is in, you tell us again where it is, because people who are, we have stations all over, so people can get there. Did you say Salem? No.
West Salem.
Oh, see, right now I know the people in East Salem, they don't like horses. West Salem, very supportive of horses. Ponies, Pinos, and Pilsners on May 21st. That sounds like a lot of fun. If you can't make it there, if you think this is a great idea, and it is, and do you take clients or patients from all over the state, or do they have to be local? If they can get there, can they participate in the programs at Horse Sense?
If they can get there, we would love to have them.
Okay. So again, after this week, you're going to be closed for a short time only because you're moving, and you have that, you're not disclosing, but you do have the new location, correct?
Yes.
So you are opening again. This is just a temporary closure to move. Great. So go to horsesensewi.org, horsesense, WI.org. You can donate to the Where Do We Grow Next campaign. You can, maybe you're going to be in West Salem for the 21st. You don't know. And now you're like, well, now I have something to do. I'm going to go to the Ponies, Pinos, and Pilsner fundraiser. Sam, it was great meeting you. Congratulations on the new location. Best of luck with the move and with the campaign and the fundraiser. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right, that's Samantha Harding, Director of Administration at Horse Sense. Jamie, do you like riding horses?
I love horses.
I do love horses, too. I don't know what it is about horses.
They have big personalities, and they're a lot like people.
And I never understood why young girls have fixations with horses.
I feel they
give cowboy vibes, which is why I like horses. And being on top of a horse does make you feel stronger. All right, Parker.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It's 8:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. There's a couple of reasons why I love this intro. One, because it's awesome. Thank you, Frank. And two, it really just means that it's the end of the week.
Yeah.
So there's two reasons.
I like hearing animal sounds and jump around because I know, hey, it's like when your job, if you get off at 5 and you know at like 4:50, you're already packing your stuff away.
Right.
You haven't turned off the computer yet because your boss is watching. But you've logged out of everything. You're putting it your route home. Maybe you're ordering your dinner, making your reservations. So that's
right.
But Dairyland Diaries is our way of leaving you with some uplifting, fun stories to launch into the weekend. Things that'll make you smile, hopefully, and feel good. Like this. Like, did you know that the longest running Chinese restaurant in a single location in the U.S. of A, the entire country, is right here in Wisconsin? That's right, Parker. Don't look so aghast. The Cozy Inn Chinese restaurant first opened in Janesville's West Milwaukee Street location in 1922.
Wow.
The restaurant has long been regarded as likely the second oldest Chinese restaurant in the country, only behind Pekin Noodle Parlor in Butte, Montana. But in April, the noodle parlor closed its doors, and now Cozy Inn Chinese restaurant is the longest running. Cozy Inn owner Tom Fong recently told WPR that it feels surreal to be the caretaker of an eatery with such a storied history. He said, "Before I say anything, I want to tip my hat to Pekin, who managed to keep that business going for 115 years. Then in a quiet side note, he went, "But they closed, suckers." No, he didn't say that. He said, "I congratulate them, but I've never really thought about our longevity before." His first memories of the Cozy Inn come from working there as a kid in the 70s after his mother bought the place. He said the family went through many struggles at the time with a language barrier, sometimes making the work even more difficult. Fong said he and his brother were the two-man front-of-house operators working with customers and trying to bring in new business. They still have some of the traditional dishes that his mom would have on the menu, like their Cantonese chow mein, sweet and sour pork, because they prepare their pork differently from other restaurants. They use wet flour on the breading for their French fries, or their fish fries, rather. They have beautiful egg rolls. So congratulations to Cozy Inn, the longest running Chinese restaurant in a single location in the country.
That's incredible.
If you get to Janesville.
That's incredible. I think
it is incredible.
I also find it very interesting that the two oldest Chinese restaurants in the country were in Butte, Montana, and Janesville.
Can you imagine 115 years ago, Butte, Montana, some cowboy rolling up and trying to get some chow mein or chop suey? Do they even make chop suey anymore?
That used to be
the neon sign in every Chinese restaurant window. Chop suey.
I think that's incredible. We've got more really great stories from around Wisconsin, including in Eau Claire, because there's two filmmakers there, BJ Hollers and Steve Dayton, and they've teamed up to make a feature-length documentary about Coob. Now, this is a Swedish lawn game with a major following in Wisconsin. Dairyland Thailand Diaries will also teach you a thing or two, people. Yes. Kings of Coob spotlights four champion players, three from Wisconsin, one from Minnesota, and it specifically follows the journey of Eric Anderson. Now, he is a Coob enthusiast who started the U.S. National Coob Championship in 2007. Wow. Anderson successfully petitioned city officials to designate Eau Claire as the Coob capital of North America. Who would have thought?
Not bad.
The game itself is relatively straightforward. You got to toss six wooden batons across an 8-meter pitch to knock down five wooden blocks called coobs on the opposing team's baseline. Once a baseline coob is knocked down, it's thrown back into the pitch to become a field coob. To end the game, a team has to knock down all of the baseline and field coobs and then take out the king, a larger wooden block at the center of the pitch. Now, while the basic game is accessible for all ages and levels, for the champion players, like Anderson, Coob has taken on the qualities of an elite sport complete with training and strategy, fully embracing the game's nickname, Viking Chess. I was going to say, this sounds a lot like chess, only you're throwing things. Throughout the film, you're going to get a chance, if you have an opportunity to see it, to get a feel for the texture of the game. While filming, Date made sure to record plenty of audio of the signature clinking sound when the baton makes contact with the wooden coob, which one player in the film likened to the satisfying crack of a baseball bat.
Wow, that's
very cool stuff.
That's like curling.
Yes.
It looks very easy, and it looked, but then this is a whole culture that I had heard of Coob once before, but I still didn't understand it. And now there's going to be a movie, so I might as well watch it.
Awesome.
All right, let's wrap up Dairyland Diaries with a story close to Parker's heart because it includes the Green Bay Packers. 20 more Wisconsin high schools have gotten help from the Green Bay Packers in starting flag intramural or club-level girls flag football programs. The $5,000 per school grants are part of a continuing program by the team to help drive interest and participation in the sport as it grows at the grassroots level. The NFL itself has led the way in pushing expansion in recent years. In addition to the grants, each school has received a USA football flag equipment starter kit and 20 protective headbands. The Packers said that in their announcement that they released on Tuesday. Four high schools in the Milwaukee area are among those receiving grants in 2026. Fox Valley recipients are getting some too. That's Freedom, Green Bay East, Kimberly, Little Chute, and Nina High Schools, plus nearby Southern Door in Brussels. And around Madison, all four of the city's public high schools are included, East, La Follette, West, and Vel Phillips Memorial, as is Verona. Flag football, originally conceived by U.S. soldiers for recreation during World War II, and upwards of 100 NAIA and NCAA universities have fielded women's teams in recent years. There's been a push within the NCAA to take the sport to the level at which it has a national championship. So good on the Packers, good on the ladies playing flag football,
awesome.
And good on us for making it through another week. This week has been long. Another week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of the show this week. Jamie is not going to be here next week, but Frank Parker and I will be. Have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day. I'm Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak.
I'm Jamie Martinson. It is 8:59. Thank you so much for another week. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.